Welcome back to Fan Wonderland, and it's time to get witchy yet again. I'm Kai Bradbury, and here's your host, TJ.
Thank you, Kai, and we're back to Fan Wonderland, and got yet privileged to have another Motherland Fort Salem cast member in Kai Bradbury join us today. Kai, which actually means ocean in Japanese, which we'll touch on during this, because there's a lot of Japanese influence through Kai's work, is a proud son of a Japanese mum and a Scottish dad. Wonderful combo there. Mixed with a Venezuelan family influence thanks to his real-life modern family upbringing. Grew up surrounded by the arts, painters, architects, jewelers, floral designers, you name it, pretty much been around it, and naturally dove into art classes, photography and sculpting. So I think going to have a connection there. And has also done Vancouver and Edinburgh and Scotland Fringe Festivals, and over a dozen plays, including ones like Rent, West Side Story and Oliver. And as part of the musical theatre program, and the rest is history from there, because apparently being a triple threat is not enough for Kai. So welcome, Kai.
Hello, thank you so much.
Thanks for giving up your time to chat with us today.
Thank you, TJ. So happy to be here.
Now, the first one you kicked your career off in would be The Man in the High Castle, which is on Amazon for those that haven't seen it. For those that either have seen it or haven't yet seen it, or have seen part of it like myself but found it rather intense, How would you describe that as being for your first, I suppose, major role in your career? How would that be? Because being Amazon, they're not known for the likes of production. So I gather that's been versus before.
Yeah, that was my first big foray into film and TV, and certainly was a small feat. You're right. They do their shows big, and High Castle, their budget only skyrocketed from when I appeared in season two. I went in straight out of theater school, actually, very bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and just wanted to pick up everything that I could along the way. And that the scenes that I did in particular demanded a lot from me. I was using multiple different guns. When you shoot with weaponry, you've got usually like a period model one, you've got a rubber one, you've got a plastic one. I also don't smoke, and my character was smoking. We had blood packs. We had, you know, restrictive uniforms, and I was barking orders for a big 12-hour day. So there was a lot happening for my first job. Yeah.
Now, being Japanese, there seems to be a really good connection and a positive connection in that, well, your whole pride in being Japanese. And you're also a part of AMC's The Terror, which I think I've heard of, but haven't actually come across. There seems to be a lot of World War-based roles that you seem to like doing as well, which is rather unique. But what's The Terror like for those that... Because I know AMC tends to go quite violent, quite graphic. Is there... What's The Terror like for those of us that haven't really seen it?
So The Terror actually originally was based off of a book by Dan Simmons, a true story where the Brits were trying to get through and ended up ice landlocked above Canada. And so it's basically they take this horrifying historical tale and add a supernatural element to it. So after that initial series, it ended up becoming an anthology. So the second series was about the Japanese-American internment, primarily on the west coast of North America. And we follow a Japanese community in California through kind of the horrors of what happened historically, but they're also being terrorized by a Japanese demon called a Yudei. And yeah, so it was an amazing experience working with George Takei among many incredible, globally sourced Japanese actors, and to tell a story that George Takei related to so deeply was hugely important. And I was able to play a role that was actually half Caucasian, half Japanese. And I've never encountered a role written so perfectly for me since.
I mean, acting with George would be an honor for anyone, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and 80, he just turned 83 a couple days ago, I think yesterday. And it's just amazing watching him work. You know, they had him sling in this ice pick that we were shooting, this dramatic scene where they're interrogating me out on a frozen lake, and it was freezing outside, and he just has the highest spirits all the time.
And because apparently one series with Amazon's not enough, you also appeared in The Boys, which, for those unaware, I think I did start briefly on it. I mean, how would you describe it? It's very much a comedy. It's very much dark. It's very hard to explain unless it's also based on a comic. Sorry, there's also that. And you've also been in Altered Carbon as well, albeit very briefly, in season one.
Yes.
I think the gap between season one and two is so much that just a lot of us just forgot about season one by the time season two rolled around. It was like, I don't remember that
happening. Oh, yeah.
I was like, I don't remember that, and I don't remember that. And so I was sort of like trying to reconnect with it all, which is... And you've also been in Warigami and Supernatural, both on the CW. Well, Warigami is actually Canada and CW joint one.
Mm-hmm.
Did try and find that before this. Sadly, no luck. I'm going to continue trying to look for that. It's going to be tricky. And of course, Supernatural, coincidentally, Natalie, our previous guest, was also on as well. And it seems like, I guess, most actors sort of they start generally on the CW somehow. I gather that's been a Vancouver-based actor probably helps with that.
Yeah, well, we actually shoot a huge amount of CW shows in Vancouver. A lot of the superhero shows, we do Riverdale. And Supernatural is certainly a staple for the Vancouver actor, so I was super glad to snag a quick little spot on it before they wrapped it all up. And the director of the episode I did in Supernatural, Amanda Tapping, phenomenal artist, actress, director, and she ended up being on the board of people who were bringing Garrett on to Motherland. And she ended up directing the first episode that I played on in Motherland. So it was, she really played a huge part among the other people on the panel as well in changing my life in that way and giving me that opportunity.
And which is our main reason for bringing you on today is Motherland. Because it's, you've got, it's very much, I would imagine, your first, I suppose, or not the first, but one of your first, I suppose, recurring, fairly major character roles, I would say.
Yeah.
As you know, you've been in other series, but as main characters with a fleshed-out story arc goes, I imagine this is probably one of the more unique ones, I guess.
Yeah, even my time on Warigami was, even though I was a main character, we shot that in such a quick, condensed amount of time. And so my time playing Garrett on Motherland ended up being kind of the longest I've ever spent living as a character and following through, like you said, an arc. So yeah, that was really fun.
Now, there's an awful lot to talk about Motherland. And I mean, anyone who listens to our podcast is going to know, but we're going to put a bit of a warning because it does get quite sexual from episode two onwards. Which I think is a really a credit to Freeform that it does not feel like a Freeform show. Like, Freeform is meant to be this family channel. It is not a family show. It's pushing it, I'd say, very, very much.
Yeah, as far as, you know, it being a branch of Disney, it's certainly rebranded itself since its ABC days. But its slogan is a little forward, and it certainly is a little forward.
Very much, I mean, because there's a lot I want to cover on this, because as those who look at their cover will see, you're kissing Jessica, but it does get a lot more than that, involving, to an extent, from what we can see, some nudity, and I don't think we've really had a guess that I've been able to sort of dig into that and go, how is that film? Because there's so many ways Hollywood does that in, they want to respect the actors, they want to, you know, some do, some don't. How is, given Motherland and this set and everything, how is that film? Because for context, for those that haven't seen it yet, there is a lot of sex in one episode. And that's been generous. It's pretty much everywhere. Like, there is at least some skin within every couple of seconds. So, do you want to give a bit of a background, like, how they sort of approach that and going, okay, look, we want you to do this?
Yeah. So, I think there's been huge leaps and bounds in advancement in how this, how intimacy has been handled in Hollywood. Considering, you know, the Me Too movement and just sort of all of us collectively waking up and smartening up about how we're handling sexuality in the workplace. And being an actor is a very strange job in that way. So when it comes to my experience, which was my first experience with intimacy on film and television, was we had a intimacy coach and her assistant, and they were fantastic with a private coaching for all the actors, independent of the directors and producers. We analyzed the script and essentially choreographed simple movements that were within our ratings and what we could physically do, and figure out how we could tell this story and convey everything that was in the script in a way that was comfortable and safe for us. When it comes to shooting, we are in what's called a closed set. So a lot less people roaming around. We've got robes on hand. Generally, when you're shooting, there's a lot of monitors floating around kind of everywhere. And so only the directors, called Video Village, only their monitors are on. So it was very well handled and an excellent experience. And having Jessica kind of going through it with her and giggling through it and learning about how it's all done was so great. I was so grateful to have her be my scene partner.
When you say close set, is it actually that big of a set? Because context and slight spoilers here for the episode, there's all it's pretty much happening all over the grounds. Is it actually that big a grounds, or is that just very well green screened?
So we were actually on location outside. Fort Salem itself is all kinds of different grounds. This one in particular was actually a private residency, I believe, with a huge garden, beautiful, beautiful garden with ponds and they decorated it beautifully. So we were actually shooting, you know, barefoot, sundown, bugs in the air, feet in sticks and mud. Poor Jess was up against a tree, and it really is. It's true what they say. It's very unsexy when you've got, you know, a choreography and people shooting with cameras close up in your face, and it's all very technical. And so it's really a wonder that it looks anything like it does when you see the final product.
Now you've described, it's like, yeah, it sounds the complete opposite to how it seems, which, I mean, are you aware of the entire script, or do you just get the script for, like, your parts and that's it?
So, generally, we have what's called a table read, I'm sure you know, where the cast assembles, or as much of the cast who that's available, assembles in the production room, and we do sort of an out loud play reading, as it were. So the producers, directors, writers, everyone can hear it out loud, and we have, you know, people in the States phoning in because we were shooting in Vancouver, and some of the cast was, you know, international, hadn't arrived yet, so they're also being phoned in. But yes, I do receive the scripts for all the episodes that I am in. So
have you been watching as have you been watching as a fan from the beginning, aside from your episodes, obviously?
Well, so do you mean as they're coming out?
Yes. Yeah. So have you? I gather they probably wouldn't, because it's still in a lot of post production, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm. So we were lucky enough to, some of us were able to see the first chunk of episodes. But the best is live tweeting with the East Coast premieres in the States as they come out on Wednesdays. It's so nice to have the fan interaction. And I do get to kind of watch the show as a fan and see, especially the later episodes that I haven't seen, it's going to be quite quite an experience getting to watch it live with everybody else.
I know there's, again, I think that's one of the things that I was sort of hoping for and expecting, but didn't really notice until just lately, because we spoke to Taylor before Motherland actually premiered, so I didn't actually have all the fan reaction and get to see the fact of just, it's very quickly being embraced by the fans, which is amazing to see. Now, I'm hopeful, and you might have a bit of a better inkling on this, is there a potential probability for season two to pretty much happen once filming can resume?
Well, nothing has been confirmed or announced, but Elliot Lawrence, our creator, showrunner, has had this world in his head for so long. And I think Taylor had mentioned as well that this is, you know, the entire storyline of Motherland is crafted in his brain. So there's no shortage of content and parts of the universe to explore. I mean, I'm seeing questions about the session and more about the male witches and how they function and how witches work in other countries and their own militaries. And so it's so brilliant having this kind of new world to explore.
I mean,
I would love for more.
Like, I want, like, the seeds. Like, I want to know how many there are. Like, there's so much lore there that's just not explained. I feel like they need to do some merch for the fans as well, because there's so many good things. Particularly Scylla's, what do we call it, corsage, I guess. I just kind of want that as like dad resort, because it's really creepy, weird, and sexy weird, as mentioned in the show.
Absolutely.
Which I feel like I've got to ask.
Yeah.
Do you ship Rayla with everyone else, and are you as equally worried as all of us?
Well, it's I know kind of the outcome of this season, so I can't really speak on my personal opinions too much. But from what we've seen, I don't know. Scylla's done some pretty terrible things. But, you know, it's young love. We want to see it happening.
It's like, I love that they haven't just gone the stereotypical, like, gay storyline and just like it's all sunshine and rainbows, because it's not. It's probably one of the most uncertain ones I've seen, in that I'm worried for Rael's safety, but then also it's like, for starters, I want to do some digging on the composer at some stage, see if we can get them on, because goddamn, that spree theme is just creepy as hell.
Yeah,
and I mean, whose idea was it to make balloons something to be scared of for us now?
Oh, yeah, no, don't blame me.
Because, I saw a brief, like, spoiler-free review beforehand. As like, and creepy balloons. I was like, okay. And then I watched, I'm like, oh, right. And in episode 5, that just goes, like, just full on, completely, let's just throw lots of them at you. So it's...
Yeah.
And, I mean, because we are going to touch on spoilers here. Honestly, and I think this goes to the VFX team, because damn, there's just some brilliant work there. With the burning the faces off, the switch between... the name escapes me. With the Biddy's life, where the young girl comes in, and then it's just a shift that. And,
yeah,
like, the way it's so seamless it did, it's like you blink and you've missed it. It's that good and that quick. And, like, yes, we're going with the TV budget versus, like, film budgets where they go massive CGI. But for whatever budget they're working with, the VFX is damn impressive. Whether it's goddamn Scylla's setting her face on fire all the time. And I've got so many questions about that because, one, how does the spree change their faces? And, like, the one that imitated Rael, like, is she inhabiting someone else's body? Are they, like, what's happening while the other body's there and that sort of thing? Like, I'm assuming all of that will eventually be answered, but there's so much, like I said, that's been planned out. I feel like there's either got to be like an accompanying companion guide or something, which, if Elliot listens to this episode, it's Elliot, isn't it? The creator.
Oh, sorry. I think answers will start to come in, and I love that there's no hand-holding happening. You're just kind of thrust into it. And to touch on the VFX, I'm so glad you enjoy it. I enjoy it so much. Incredibly impressive VFX, I think, for a TV budget. And some things you wouldn't even clock that are VFX, you know, they're just enhancing and supporting so much.
Any particular ones you want to shed light on there that we may not realize that is?
The spoilers, but Bernadette Beck's throat, Charvel Bellwether's throat, was completely animated, where they had cut it open.
I mean, that sort of makes sense, although maybe you would have thought prosthetics, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I even when I first saw it, I assumed that they had done prosthetics with that. So a standout for me is also actually the bird animation in episode 3, going in and out of Porter's mouth.
That one kind of makes sense, because I was thinking, how did they do that? Because there's just so much detail there. But I mean, like, when you look at shows like
that, Flash, it's amazing
that have these VFX, it's insane what they're actually doing with the budgets they can. That they're actually doing so, so good to the VFX that you just don't question it, and it really fits in. I mean, like, even with, like, the cyclones, hurricanes, whatever you'd like to call them, in this show, even those look real enough that you're not questioning it, that it actually makes sense. I mean, like, all those balloons, I'm imagining that was probably VFX. If it wasn't, I'm impressed.
Oh, absolutely. It is, yeah.
I mean, doing that basic would be a lot of work, but... Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I didn't count them all, but there was mainly because I was too worried about for everyone else's safety of what was going on. But I mean, for those listening, we are speaking before episode 6, which I'm going to imagine is going to step it up a major notch, given how we left the end of episode 5, which is just insane. And I mean, the fact of this is so well written with the banter and. The fact you've got, like, Abigail and Rael just flip-flopping as to whether they like each other or not. It's just, it's so well done, I think. And, I mean, even when all of the boys came in, it's just, it's done well and as you'd expect it to go, I suppose. But, yeah, it's just, it's a very different show, and I think gauge that from the initial watching the trailer and, you know, talking to Taylor beforehand that it was going to be something a little different because, one, that's what Freeform does. And I think I love that Freeform's starting to do so many good shows. Just, you've got Sirens, just, we're into season 3 now. Hopefully Motherland will, I mean, I don't know how many seasons are planned. I hope there's a lot because there's so much I want to get into. Although, really, I just want them to release it like a guide of things that fill in some lore that the show doesn't have time to do. Like the foot stomping. I need a background of how that came about. What's it mean? There's different elements of that. You know, like you've got, what, Seed 59 or something. I'm like, how many are there? Like something that the show may never touch. I just need like for the Hunger Games, although these companion guides, do one for Motherland. Because one, I want merch, and two, there's so much that I feel like the show just doesn't have time to talk about, like that sort of thing. Like, the foot stomping's very clearly in place of, you know, a pause or whatever. And it was like a, you know, an affirmation, I suppose. And so it's like trying to figure out little things like that that just want some background on as a fan. That hopefully that's something they'll do.
Yeah, I want merch just as much as you do. But yeah, it's, I think, especially when it comes to the stomping, I think that was just a really great way to start off us seeing how different we are. Like the world that we're in, you know, this is not the same America that we know. And the first half of the season, I agree, definitely spends a lot of time giving us some world building. And you're right, 5 is a huge jumping off point to a whole lot of action. I mean, if you go from a
critical point, I suppose, it's like episode 2, 3, and 4 are kind of quote unquote filler, if we've just been really mean about it. And then 5 just pretty much looks like bang, because you just got so comfortable with the, like, the amount of story building they did, and then they just fully just went all out for 5. That it just feels like one of those mid-season finales or a season finale, and it's not. It's just a regular episode. So I'm like, yeah, that's the stakes for 5. What's the stakes for the season finale going to be? It's just, I mean, it's, I'm over Rael at this point. But, I mean, the fact that after 5 episodes, they can already have you connecting to these characters. Like when Tally was signing the toilet, it seems like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And it's just at that point where you're just worried about them. I think it says a lot for the writing and the cast that you're actually there. And like when we found out about the fact that your character is engaged and being a total dick. The actor's fine, but the character is just... let's be real, he's not being a dick to Tally. It's the fact that he's engaged. And, I mean, there's another bit of world-building there, is this, like, 5-year kind of commitment that's not quite a marriage, but it is a marriage, but it's not. Which is something else that they also brought in.
Yeah.
That it's like, okay, that's different.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely kind of, as we saw in episode 4, these witches are a little bit more open to some sexual freedom in polyamory, maybe. So maybe the stakes aren't as high as everyone's judging, but...
I mean, I got to say, Freeform does love their poly couplings. They've got a poly on Freeform, and... presumably, albeit a temporary one, possibly with Abigail and the other two as well. So I love that they're just normalizing a lot of this, that it's just there and it's part of it. Like, they don't question it, they don't bring it up, they don't query. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the soft fact that Tully's like, oh, we're calling it girlfriend now, are we? And it's just like that cute little part that's sort of before everything else just hits you in the face. And so it's that good balance, I think. I think that's where it's really shining for particularly Freeform, in that we've got Motherland and Siren. They're both in this very different, non, I I suppose, for lack of a better word, grounded reality, because you've got like Grownish and all the others that are sort of just in this world. But then you've got Sirens in its own world, Motherlands in its own world. Fortunately, when we were chatting with Ian, chances are not going to cross over. I would really like to see that, though. You've got witches and mermaids. It's perfect combo. But evidently, from what I can gather, people are not going to let that happen in a hurry. I kind of wanted to, though. But, I mean, I gather we're probably going to see more of Garrett. I thought it was Garrett until the subtitles showed me otherwise that it was Garrett. And it's G-E-R-I-T for anyone wondering. And, yeah, it's...
Yes, a new witchy way of spelling it. I've noticed
there's a lot of very witchy, unusual names, such as... And especially with the last names I noticed, you've got Collars one, you've got... Scylla's escapes me at the moment. It's... Ramshorn. It's just Ramshorn. All these normal words, but they've made them last names, and it's so, so weird. But then it sort of makes total sense to the world, so... It just works really well in that regard, I think. So I'm imagining we're going to see a lot more of you, assuming you don't get killed off this season. It's a little like Game of Thrones in that regard
Garrett. For
anyone that get to watch it, in that I'd like to imagine nobody's safe at this point. I mean, as you mentioned... One that I was expecting to stay around just got completely murdered. So at this point, anyone's potentially vulnerable. And given your non-spoilery allusions to Rayla this season, I'm a little concerned if they're going to make it out.
Well, you know, I got to keep the mystery going. Okay, right?
And
Yeah, it's super fun, and I love that there's that uneasy feeling, because you're right, nothing is promised, and I guess nobody is safe, and that's what I love. The show marries these two, kind of this action with this huge heart, and so it really, really has you on this roller coaster with us. I think that's why episode... You know, 2, 3, 4, though they may, you know, action-wise and stuff be less exciting, they're just so critical in having you kind of fall in love with these characters.
By episode 5, they just
carry on to the rest of the season, right? Yeah.
I think it's what we've got a 10, is it 10 episode season, I believe? 10.
That's right.
Hopefully they'll
that's
do right. a siren and extend it to like 16 for a season 2 would be good. Because I think Siren was a 10-episode first season.
Yeah, we'd love to see that.
When it got picked up, it was then got an extended season, I think. So it'd be cool to see that sort of thing, because I feel like that'd allow for some more world-building, allow for some more fleshing out of that. I think I love that it doesn't hold back in, you know, doing that sort of very... Well, being like a really sexy show that's not all about the sex... But yet you still expect it in the episodes because that's just the show. But that's not all it is. You know, like someone just like, go watch Game of Thrones, it's got nudity. Whereas this is like, it's just part of the story and it's part of who they are. So I think, and you know, like you said, there's a lot more freedom there. Like the fact that, I love that little touch. I mean, for our community, I love the touch of like, Rael bonding with, and I forget his name, one of the boy witches, and
Byron.
That could have been him. Yeah, and I mean, like, the way they just did that with, like, oh, what do you assume? Oh, that's why I'm into girls. And it was like, and he was he shot back with a similar. It was just that, like, that light banter that sort of makes the episode feel a little lighter before it throws you the really heavy stuff. So I think it's just the... And I mean, Taylor in that suit just... I mean, it's no wonder the show's been really embraced by the community in the fact that just the positive representation. I mean, it's women in uniform. That's a big one for us. So I think that as well. And I love that the women do have the better uniform in this case, actually. Because the guys have just got this bland, boring uniform, and the women have just got these really nice, sharp navy blue with the red, and like, it's it's done really well.
It's so great. Yeah, it's so great to see all of that representation, and like you mentioned earlier, it's not, we don't linger on it. You know, we have all kinds of race and sexuality and body type and gender all over our show, but it's just there. It's happening and we don't comment on it, and we get that benefit of it not being a lecture, but just still being able to have that representation for people who really desperately need to see that and see themselves reflected.
The song was mentioned in, it was that there's something that Freeform tends to do really well, whether it's Siren or Motherland, in that there is that representation. They don't, you know, as you said, they don't try and lecture you on it. It's just there. It's part of the show, and that's it. Like, nobody, it's never questioned. It's never stereotyped. I mean, that was a fun stereotype with Rayo and Byron. But there was one that we can appreciate because it's such a consistent one that happens. And I think that's the type of stereotype one we don't mind. Yeah, but I think that's why it just works so well, and that's why the fans really fall in love with it. I'm starting to just see them just popping up as I'm going through Twitter, just seeing the amount of love. I mean, I started seeing fan art of Motherland, and like that's a really exciting part when you can get in the show to that point. And hopefully that's something that Freeform takes into consideration, is we've got this fan art, you know, we've got this massive fan base that's really embracing this show. And so hopefully that's something they can really tie into and go, okay, yeah, we've got a base here. Let's bring it back for more seasons, because it's such a different show.
We would love that. And yeah. And I think what a big part that attributes to that is having the diversity and representation of demographic in our creators' rooms, in our showrunners, in our directors, in our writers. We've had many more female directors than I've seen any other series do.
I think it's five, because Taylor tweeted something about that the other day. It's five, is it, I think?
That's right, yeah. And I got to work, I worked with four of them, and that was just so great to see. And we've got queer members of the community. We've got female writers, all kinds of different people creating and working on the show, and I think that's why people are connecting to it so deeply, because there's that level of authenticity.
I think that describes the show perfectly, is the authenticity. Which is, and before we do leave you, is there any more upcoming work besides Motherland episodes that you have upcoming that we may not know about?
At the moment, I don't have anything else in the works. This pandemic has put a stop in our production of everything, essentially. So look forward to the rest of the season. Look out for Garrett. He will be back. I promise that.
Thank you very much for giving up your time to chat with us today. Been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, TJ. It was great.
And you can catch Motherland Fort Salem if you're in America. It is on Hulu. If you're in Australia, it's on Foxtel and Foxtel Now, so go check it out. The way I promote it is it's got witches and it's super gay, which it is. And that's usually an easy way to get anyone on board. So it's a very good series. We haven't really spoiled a great deal of it for any of you. If you're interested in it, go watch it. Warigami, which Kai is also in, is streaming on CW Seed in the US. Sadly, no idea where it is for Australia, because we didn't get that. And, of course, Alter Carbon and the Amazon shows are on the respective ones, Alter Carbon being Netflix, and the Amazon ones being, of course, on Amazon. And so go check those out if you would like to see more of Kai. And hopefully we'll get to see more of Kai once this pandemic ends. And you never know, might get Garrett in season 2, 3 onwards of Motherland if we're lucky. And thank you once again. I've been your host, TJ, alongside Kai from Motherland Fort Selim, and we'll catch you in the next episode.